Thanks so much.
I just. Yes. Ben Van Ooy, can you hear us?
Yes, Commissioner.
Okay, we can hear you as well. So it looks like we've done our mic check when it comes to the microphones. I wonder if you can turn it up just a little bit. It sounds soft. Welcome this afternoon to our Board of County Commission meeting. We have the three commissioners here, and we're going to look through our agenda. As always, we start with a prayer, a reading, or a thought. We look to the audience who would like to participate with either of those, and also the Pledge of Allegiance. Are there any volunteers for those who would like to participate with us? Seeing none. Somebody always takes the pledge. Okay.
I always make Chris take the pledge. Chris, why don't you take the pledge? Okay, Chris will take the pledge.
Chris is going to voluntarily take the pledge. You just have to say that.
He was voluntold.
1 second. We'll start with a prayer, reading, or thought. Any volunteers there? Any volunteers up here on?
I'll take the prayer.
Okay. Thank you.
Our Father in heaven, we are grateful again to be able to meet and communicate as residents and as members of county government supporting these residents to be part of this remarkable country. And grateful now that we may meet and ask for thy company as we deliberate. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen. Amen. All right, Chris.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you for participating in that. You'll notice on our agenda, if you have one in front of you, that we have listed a consent agenda and it is blank. We're going to go through a process of I'm assuming, filling that agenda, that consent agenda, with items that we do not hold on our regular agenda. So if we hold it, if a commissioner wants to hold it for discussion, it'll stay on our regular agenda. Otherwise, all the other items will move to a consent agenda, which will be approved, ratified, or agreed to by all three commissioners on consent. So with that, let's start with items 1 through 10. Are there any items on 1 through 10 that any commissioner would like to hold for discussion? I don't have any.
Nope, I don't. I do not have any.
I have none.
None? Okay, how about 11 through 19? We should hold number 19. That has to be, there's a name needed there, and I'm sure there's discussion.
13, I'm not familiar with the Epitrax program. I could hear about what that entails.
Okay.
And 16 is, I'm not clear on the price for it. I didn't see that in the attachment.
Okay, 13 and 16 will hold. I thought we were going to have a really simple commission meeting. I think that for purposes, Peggy, since you're here, we would can we hold number 18 and just have some conversation? Would that be okay? Okay. All right.
Okay.
And then items number 20 through 23, the only one that I know that we need to have is item number 20. Are there any others? This is a closed.
Nope.
So we can.
I have none.
You have none? Okay. So with that, items number 21, 22, and 23, we can put that on consent as being stricken. And item number 20, we can put it on the agenda as stated for after this meeting at this location, if that's agreed to. Okay, Alice.
I'm up, huh?
You're up. Go ahead and recap.
I was holding number 13, 16, 18, 19, and then we'll have the closed meeting number 20 as stated, and striking 21, 22, and 23 meetings on consent.
Yes, that's what I have.
That's what I have.
All right, with that then, just to recap, everything else, the items that we held, we will have discussion. Everything else has gone to the consent agenda to be agreed upon, ratified, or agreed to as stated in our on the line item. So we'll go back to item number 13. That's to approve and authorize the signing of an agreement with the Utah Department of Health. Let's see, do we have somebody here from the Department of Health?
Yes.
If you want to come on up, and Commissioner Sakovich, you have some questions there.
Would you summarize the Epitrax? I was reading that it says it means the electronic disease surveillance system, a web-based product and used by the state and local health jurisdiction surveillance staff for disease surveillance, case management, and investigation activities. Some were curious about privacy issues here. Personal information will be kept private with this.
So yes, so usually what they do is we submit everything. Curtis Jones, Bureau Director of Epidemiology here at the County Health Department. So how it works is we put the information into Epitrax. It is also secure through the internet that we have here at the health, provided by the county. And then once the state has that information, they're the only ones who have access to it besides us. And then they stripped all that data and sent it to the CDC. So there's only really two channels that have it, the local health departments and the state health department.
Which department? State health department? Who? Mm-hmm.
And us. So the local health county districts. One? So all the other health districts also have access to Epitrax. They can't quite see as much as we can at the Utah County level. So we can see all the Utah County residents, but they cannot see. Other jurisdictions can't see, like, their address.
And when you say surveillance, some feel it's views from cameras and microphones and whatnot. No. So when you say surveillance, what do you mean by that
word? We mean just tracking.
Tracking.
And monitoring the way that the infections are traveling through the community. We're not, like, bugging people's houses. We're just tracking the disease and the progress that's making. So usually we use surveillance mostly with the flu, and we're just kind of tracking the numbers, hospitalizations, and that's really it.
So your focus only on numbers, not necessarily individuals.
Correct.
Okay.
So isn't bugging
from
the
Benoit.
Health department a different term than usually?
Sorry, what was
I'm
that?
I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. Oh, never mind.
Okay.
It was a bad joke.
It was a dad joke.
Yeah,
sure. It was a dad joke. It's Tyler from
Utah. This is Ben. Okay, go ahead, Tyler.
You know, the other important thing with surveillance is, you know, it's been helpful for us to find outbreaks. So with our hepatitis A that we had a couple years ago, we're able to track everybody. We're able to see that an uptick in hepatitis A. And then we use that surveillance to see where their paths cross. And so with that, we're sometimes able to pinpoint where an outbreak does happen, then work with businesses to mitigate processes to eliminate the disease from continuing to spread within our community.
Okay. So basically, we're emphasizing that this is a tracking of basic information, not individuals'
correct.
Yes. Private information. Okay. That was the only thing I need to bring up.
Okay.
If there's no other questions, a motion to be in order.
I make a motion we approve item number 13.
I'll second that motion.
I got a motion and a second to approve item number 13. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0. Number 16 is to approve and authorize the commission to signature on an amendment to an agreement between Utah County and EKR.
I was looking for a price tag on that one.
Yeah, this is Ben Benoit with the attorney's office. The price on that is $12,550. This amendment is just changing some of the dates. So this was previously approved by the commission, that amount was, and then this amendment is just changing the dates that those ads will go live.
Okay, so I added $12,550. Is that what you said, Ben?
Correct.
Okay.
But that was already, as I understand it, that was already approved before. This is just a date change.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. It's blank numbers on the check.
Yeah.
On this form. That's all I was looking for, Ben. Okay. Thank you. Then I'll make a motion to adopt or approve item number 16.
I'll second that motion.
We got a motion and a second to approve item number 16. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That passes 3-0. Okay, number 18 is to approve and authorize the commission chair to sign a compliance agreement and bond for an open pit mining operation with CMC Rock, Westlake Material LLC, of an existing mine operation. Obviously, with a lot of the concerns from the past with mining and so forth that are going on out in that area, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about what this is and what this is doing. I've had a few phone calls, and so I thought it'd be nice to be able to give you an opportunity to talk about what's going on.
Okay. CMC Rock is an existing mining operation. They started in about 2015, I believe. It's earth extraction, so it is not bonded with the Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining. They're not extracting minerals. It's alluvial material, and there's a lot of alluvial material out in that area. They started with 60 acres. Now they're expanding an additional 100, and that is quite a bit, but that area is, there's not really homes out in that area or other things. Trying to think what else you kind of want to know about it. We've not really had any concerns from the public. I've not had phone calls about this one.
How close is the nearest home to the site?
Pelican Point, there's some homes a little bit south of Pelican Point, and it's about 3 miles away from Pelican Point. So okay. The homes are pretty far away from this area. It's by the Knolls. We've had a lot of conversation about the Knolls lately, so it's down in that location.
Okay.
Would the additional 100 acres add a lot of traffic that might be an issue for the homes that are 3 miles away? It's an issue elsewhere, so I just thought I would bring that up.
Todd Cusick is the owner and operator of that, and I think he might be on Zoom, and he might be able to address that better than I can. If it does increase, I don't think it would be by a lot, but he might be there. Todd? If he's on there. Okay. All right. So I can't really address that. I'm not sure what his plans are as far as the traffic flow with the trucks coming and going. I think he's just expanding because of the materials he's, you know, finishing up in one area and moving to another.
So it may not even be an expansion, just...
I still think it's going to be an expansion.
In the way of trucks, more trucks or anything of that nature?
I really don't know if it's going to be more trucks. He's pretty active right now.
Yeah. Okay. But we've gone through all of our processes and checked off all the boxes and done our site inspections, and it follows everything that we have.
Public Works Engineering has reviewed his plan and taken a look at everything there, and because it is an existing pit, he's already gone through those initial requirements at the beginning, so to add to an existing area, it makes it a little bit easier for us to do.
Okay, thank you. That's all the questions I have. Is there any others?
Okay. Make a motion we adopt or approve item 18.
I'll second that motion.
We got a motion and a second to approve item number 18. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. Okay, number 19 is to appoint a project coordinator position in the Utah County Commission office, and Ralph's here. We've had discussion on this. This one, the name is blank in the proposal. Ralph?
Yeah. Ralph Barnes, Human Resources. The proposed appointee is Peter Brown. And the grade's been established at 5'11 for that position. So those are the parameters that would be in play for this appointment. Any questions?
Any questions?
Beginning date would be on
July 24th.
July 24th, so Friday. The only observation I would have is that the first paragraph has whereas create a project coordinator position, comma, which position is temporary and will not exceed 3 years in duration, period. We probably should insert the word comma between temporary and delete the word and then have comma, so it will not exceed 3 years in duration, then another comma, and then add and paid through the ARPA grant funds. That way the people themselves know that how this is being paid for. It's not a tax revenue source. It's not...
ARPA is tax revenue. It's just federal tax local tax revenue. Yes, but it is still being paid by tax revenue.
It is, but not for the county is... You're right. The county not is paying... Fund, right? All of us are paying into the Federal Reserve, and they in turn turn it back and send it back to us. But we're using ARPA funds to pay for this position. If that could be added, what I would ask in the resolution...
You know, Dave, can we make those updates to the resolution?
What we would do is, as indicated, we would put after the 3 years in duration, comma, paid through the American Rescue Plan Act grant.
Yes. That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other? I do want to point something out. We've had some conversations about this, a little bit of history, I think is important in this, considering what we've seen. In the last 2.5 years, it's been reported that nothing like this has ever happened, the way of going through this kind of staffing project or proposals. And I wanted to ask Ralph, if I could have a dialogue with Ralph just on some of these. Have we ever seen staffing plan changes from the commission in the last 2.5 years?
Yes.
And those changes sometimes come last second.
Yes, they do.
And then I wanted to talk just a little bit about the differences between the commission and the department heads, because they're not the same. It's pretty obvious that it's not the same. We go through the process. One, the commission has 3 department heads, and so there has to be communication, you know, with 3 individuals to come to a determination, where department heads, they can talk to themselves if they want. I'm sure they talk with others in their departments, but, you know, about the needs, but ultimately they can make that decision. So there is a difference there. The second part is the commission is the appointing body, where the department heads are not, and they have to come to the commission for, you know, approval. So there's quite a difference when we go through staffing, either on a department level or on a commission, which is different. And so, as we've discussed, you know, discussion has been going on for some time with, and I'll say these positions because there's multiple positions in there. And Ralph, I'm just curious, as we've gone through kind of the first prop, when we say the 3 commissioners or the department heads, there has been from, and I'll just ask you, you know, have you sent emails, you know, to all 3 commissioners, you know, on this position?
Yes.
And have you sent, you know, proposals? I mean, I've sent an email myself on the on the position. And have there been closed meetings on this position as well?
Yes.
So we've had dialogue for quite some time, you know, on these positions. And Ralph, have you proposed or prepared a budgetary analysis, recommended a job title and descriptions on this position?
Yes.
Which is common.
Typical, it's common.
Typical for going through, not abnormal by any sense. I mean, we all go through that. Last week, we had on our agenda multiple agenda items in which we had very little or no conversation, talking about staffing plan, very little or no conversation about them until I first saw them, you know, on the agenda system. And so, as we look at the process, obviously there was talk with the department heads as they worked through their process, and they worked with your office on a repeated basis to prepare those documents. And then we saw them kind of late in the game, not late, but we saw them in a normal process where it comes onto an agenda. And we worked on, like I said, there was probably 5 or 6 of those on last week's agenda to kind of give an example of what the department process looks like with the commission approving that process. And we've also had items where they have come onto our agenda and we've had discussion or questions, which we have talked with, you know, in an open public meeting like we do, and we've delayed it a week or even longer to have discussions, which is, I think you'd agree, is not out of ordinary.
No, I've seen all forms of delays and non-delays in these cases. And so it's sometimes they happen very, very quickly. Sometimes they happen over the course of several weeks. Correct.
Yeah. So I would assume, Ralph, I'll let you speak for yourself, that this process that we have gone through as a commission, is it out of line?
It may seem unusually quick in this case. I don't think it's out of line in regards to the fact that this has happened before. And we do rely on, of course, our rules, rely on, you know, the civil division, you know, to guide us in how we approach these things. At the end of the day, you know, the commission approves all changes to the staffing plan and changes to the budget. So it's always up to the commission the amount of, you know, scrutiny that they need or require to make their decision. So that is, you know, the variability that I think we see in these, you know, cases more than anything. It's often for us to move as, you know, quickly as we can when we have a department ask us in HR to, you know, prepare something for the agenda, but then it can take multiple, you know, iterations as you have examples. And it seems that that's more likely to be tied, well, it's often tied to source of funding is the reason why there's these, you know, iterations. If it's going to affect, you know, the general fund, for example, there tends to be a lot more dialogue as opposed to maybe something that's grant funded. For example, health department often has, you know, grant funded cases that just go right through without any question. They happen very quickly. So yeah, there is a really wide variety. Our office, you know, the civil division really tries to stay on track as far as making sure the process is fair and consistent. I do agree that in this case, it may have seemed like it was fast, and maybe the, you know, scrutiny level wasn't there. But you're right; there was a lot of talk behind the scenes on this one. I think that. So, you know, to answer your question, is this one out of order? Not really. If you look at what's happened over the last, you know, 3.5 years since I've been here, we've had a variety of these types of, you know, situations. So,
and it would probably maybe just in my conclusion of this, from the last process we had at the end of last year, this one had a lot more discussion. You know, considering what was put on an agenda last second compared to the one last year, there's a lot more dialogue than we've actually had in the past when it came to the commission looking at staffing plans.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. There's been, for that example, that one went through really fast. Maybe should have had more discussion. I don't know. but yeah, there, I, you know, just like I said, I've seen a huge variety of how these go through, how much, you know, scrutiny is required of the commission to make a decision. Again, that's totally up the commission. You're the guys making the decision about spending the money, so it's in your, you know, court how much you want to you know, scrutinize. In addition, I do, at the same, on the other side of the coin, I do feel strongly, well, it's the same coin, but I do feel strongly that we handle these as fairly as possible and as, you know, consistently as possible. But I'm also realistic in understanding that the environment changes with time and the circumstances change. So we're always going to try to follow the rules as best we can. And generally, the civil division will keep me on track.
Generally is the key word on that.
Right. But yeah, we do really try to maintain a fair, you know, process that's open.
So. Okay. That's all I have. Is there any other comments?
Yeah, I was going to make one note. With the change of us saying funded with ARPA, does that mean we can't use emergency rental assistance funding for this? Or if we specify that the position is funded specifically with ARPA, then that would not allow us to use FEMA grant to supplement any of this cost, emergency rental assistance to supplement any of this cost, or any of those others?
Yeah, if that's going to be an issue, then that language ought to be broadened or taken out. I don't know if that's a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, you could change it to just be COVID-related or COVID response-related or something of that sort.
Yeah, because we're transitioning from CARES to ARPA, and ARPA in the overview.
Or FEMA, or ERA.
Yes, and exactly. And so ARPA is, at least the current broad overview, allows for a wide range of emergency responses and recovery processes. There may be some details, yeah. But other than that.
You could just modify that and indicate that it will be funded through federal grants.
Okay.
Yeah, I would feel more comfortable with that so that we have the latitude if it's a FEMA project or an ERA project that we can utilize those funds.
Then instead of ARPA on the resolution, it would read federal grants.
Correct.
Okay, that would be good. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good move.
It's a great
move. Yeah, that would be good because that would take in the whole larger umbrella.
Yeah, I don't want to pigeonhole us.
Do we have our code set up that way? Are we setting our...
I know if we don't, we're setting them up.
Okay. That's all I want to know.
Yeah.
Either they're set up or they will be set up.
As they come, we set them up. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
I think that's what Rudy was saying. Yes. Yes. That.
As quickly as possible.
Push, right.
Okay.
I feel more comfortable with that.
Just the only other thing I would point out that this administrator, if that's the correct project coordinator, whatever we wish to call it, is shown as project coordinator, but while this grant project coordinator is to regularly report to the commission chair. That person freely interacts with all three. I wanted to bring that out on a regular basis, but it still takes a majority of the commission to approve projects as sure. We've been doing
yeah.
in the past. I just want to bring that out as well.
Yeah. Okay, if there's no other discussion or motion.
Make a motion that we adopt agenda item number 19.
I will second that motion.
We had a motion.
For clarification, that would be with Peter Brown in the blank.
Yeah, I thought Ralph said that name, but yeah, it is. It's
part of the motion. The name Peter Brown to it, yes, in the blank.
Okay.
And adding the word funded through federal grants.
Federal grants, yes, instead of ARPA, yes.
Good. All right. If that's the motion and the second holds,
mm-hmm.
okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. Okay. All right. We have our closed meeting set.
Work session.
Ton, you're up and your group. Come on up. We got a work session now to listen to an update from Utah State University's Utah County 4-H. Program.
I'm personally going to be very brief. Ton Bettis, USU Extension, live in Santaquin, and I'm going to let Melanie Ogan and Dave Francis. Dave is a state 4-H chair for over 4-H programs. Melanie's our county 4-H program leader, and we've introduced the ag portion. We did the mentoring program last month, and so this month I wanted to just take a few minutes, especially for our newer commissioners, to just give you the opportunity to ask questions about 4-H, what it is, and then have discussion with them. So if there's no more further questions for me, I'll take a seat. Okay.
Thanks, Don. Dave Francis, Utah State University, and if we can hop to that next slide. Oh, there's a clicker? Oh, even more effective. I love it. So if you're not familiar with Utah State University, we are your land-grant university. We are the only land-grant in the state, and that is a result of the 1862 Morrill Act, which established land-grant colleges across the nation, and then the Smith-Lever Act of 1914 established county offices in every county of the state, except for in our case, Daggett does not have an extension office. They split their services between the Uinta County and then and Wyoming. So if you go back to that original legislation, the intent was to take the work from the land grant university and get it into the hands of people. And we do that in the area of agriculture, natural resources, home and community, and 4-H and youth. And what separates 4-H and youth from those other two is not the discipline as much as the strategy. Because what we found in the early 20th century is our people were leaving the land-grant university from these offices, and people didn't really care to adopt new practices as it related to food preservation, agriculture, natural resources. John Widsoe, for example, went to Sevier County and was told quickly he needs to take the next train out of there because his hands were the hands of a book farmer and they couldn't teach them anything. And what we found is across the nation, the same thing happened of people telling the university, we're good, we don't need your information. And so as a result of that, 4-H was founded because 4-H recognized that youth are willing to try new things. And what we found is in the early 20th century, when an average farmer was generating 30 to 40 bushels of corn per acre, that some of our 4-H youth were generating 130, 140 bushels per acre. And why? It's because they applied the techniques with hybrid corn, with the other growing techniques that the land grant taught them. So what separates 4-H from other youth serving organizations is we weren't designed as an intervention to help make kids' lives better. We were an intervention to try and disseminate information to communities and drive change in communities through youth. And that idea continues on today through 4-H youth programs. We have four big areas. We have STEM, we have agriculture, we have citizenship and civic engagement, and we have healthy living. So as part of our work in Utah, we did a survey of all of our elected officials here, and then we identified what are their critical issues, and then how are we addressing them. And so the top five are protecting water quality, strengthening local food systems, assisting farmers in agricultural production and profitability, helping youth develop leadership and life skills, and protecting air quality. So even though only one of those items is youth, what we're doing is we're infusing through things like water fairs, through youth gardening programs, the other four options there. And so it's a twofer. I like to think of it as we are teaching the positive leadership and life skill development, but we're also teaching content. So how do we do this? And the irony is yesterday we were in Salt Lake County at their county council meeting, and this topic of what are we? Are we just plows and cows? And several of the commissioners remembered their 4-H experience or their youth 4-H experience as related to horses, as related to livestock, sowing. But we're much more than that because we are the extension of the land-grant university to youth. So everything that happens at a land-grant university is what we're going to disseminate through 4-H. And how do we do that? Well, we take that research-based experience, so what's happening that's actually research-based that we know works, and then we give them a caring adult or a mentor or 4-H leader, and then we give them a project and a way to lead out. And we do that in those four areas that we discussed. And that takes the form of robotics clubs. It takes the form of our very traditional horse and livestock programs and our innovation as we're looking at dealing with opioid and suicide and teen mental health. That's what we're trying to do. And the last slide I have here is, why is 4-H important? I believe that more than anything else that we do, we help identify youth, what is their spark? And spark doesn't just mean, oh, that's a hobby I like to do. Spark is what fuels these kids and drives them to want to do more. So we provide a lot of explore experiences to help kids say, I might want to try and do this. So whether that be a farm field day or a robotics demonstration at the fair, we provide enough of an activity to say, huh, I might like this. And if a youth identifies, this is my spark, then we want to go on and say, okay, how can I provide a deeper learning experience? And that deeper learning experience comes in the form of learn activities. These are our 4-H camps. Those are our 4-H clubs. And then as kids begin to progress down this pathway, what we begin to see is kids saying, I actually want to do this more. And that's when we see kids taking on a more robust experience, typically involving over 30 to 50 hours of involvement every year, whether that be preparing for a contest or a leadership opportunity. That allows these kids to, again, develop the leadership and life skills as well as the content knowledge. So in your county, for example, we have what we call Teens Reaching Youth. And these Teens Reaching Youth teams, they found a spark for a topic, whether that be healthy living or mental health or STEM, And they went to a training and they said, okay, I'm invested. And now they're coming back to your community and they're teaching other youth in their community to start this process over again. But by them being at that level three and these new youth coming at a level one, that feeder crop allows kids to further their leadership and life skills. And then that last piece is experience. And that's when kids begin to say, this is what I want to be in life. This is what I will do as a career. And that's when we can help kids really extend into internships and job shadows and really begin to hone their skills and then connect them for where do you want to go? Is it a university? Is it a tech school? Where can you get the education that you need to contribute back to the community and feed your spark for your life? And so that, in a nutshell, is why we exist. And that's why we utilize the youth to fulfill the Land-Grant mission, is we know that youth are more interested in trying new things and will adopt new behaviors, and that's what will drive change in our community. And with that, I will turn it over to our 4-H coordinator, Melanie Ogon, to discuss the local Utah County impacts that they're making with the program.
And Utah County Fair.
Yes. Thank you, Dave. My name is Melanie Ogon. I'm the 4-H coordinator for the County of Utah. Which way does this thing go? That way. Okay. I have some handouts if you want them.
Yeah, sure. One.
Approach the bench, so to speak. So just real quick, I know my colleague Brandon Summers spoke with you in June. I was actually on a camping trip with you for one of our teen experiences, and we were off the grid for 4 days and had a great fun with that. And we're connecting with teens and having our first in-person experience again for some time. So 4-H in Utah County consists of two main arms. There's the Mentoring and Health Rocks arm, which you were informed of last month. And then there's what we often refer to as the traditional 4-H program. And that is what I oversee and operate here in our county. And that is comprised of what we refer to as community clubs. These can be clubs of any project area topic, from traditional livestock, horse clubs, to STEM clubs, to family clubs. There's a whole variety. Our family clubs are often referred to now as 4-H at home clubs, stemming from our experience with COVID. And we feel that it's a great new name. It encourages more people to get involved in remote areas where clubs are less prevalent. We spend a lot of our time from our office focusing on civic engagement and leadership opportunities through our teen council, junior teen council, and project ambassador clubs that we operate from our county with volunteers as well as with office staff who are the leaders of those groups. And then those youth also participate not only at the county level, but in state, regional, and national experiences. But my focus as of late in trying to bring 4-H to the community is the development of a 4-H being brought to you program. And so what we have done this summer is we've been able to bring on a part-time 4-H STEM assistant, a young man who ironically has completed the entire pathway. We're very proud of him. He was a National Youth in Action Award recipient in the area of STEM from our county. He has been hired on. He's attending BYU this year and majoring in mechanical engineering, and he is serving his summer and his fall part-time job in our office, and he's been a great help. We have partnered with Salem Library, and we're providing currently 2 days a week of STEM programming to youth between the ages of 8 and 12, and he's facilitating that process there. Salem has been very appreciative and have asked that we continue this into the fall, and so we will be doing weekly programming in the fall to accommodate his school workload. So we're really excited about that and continuing to drive that. So a lot of our drive there is reversing, rather than having people come to us in our office, taking 4-H out into the community. Another way we've done that is we were able to receive a small grant from the Facebook Community Action Grant this year, and we have been providing STEM-based workshops in Eagle Mountain. There's 4 workshops in total, and then we have an obligation to also do a county-wide STEM fair and STEM B, which hopefully we'll have more in the fall. So that's what we're focusing on there. And in addition talked a little bit about our civics and leadership already. There's our showcase opportunities. The fair is one of our major showcase opportunities, so we appreciate that moving forward this year and the chance to do that on a larger scale. But there's also other opportunities, such as mock legislature, state contests, county contests, where youth participate and demonstrate those things, the sparks that Dave talked about earlier, to show off and to grow and learn and then turn around and be able to bring those back to additional youth and through youth leadership, youth teaching youth. And just as a reminder, 4-H is for everyone. Doesn't matter, tall, short, whatever. We want you. We want to have you participate. 4-H is a great opportunity to learn and grow and to be a part of building your local community as well as your larger community and all of that. Just one last thing I just wanted to share with you was our engagement survey. We did this last year. I think two of you are new, so I thought I'd just share it real again quick. Is we did an assessment and shared out with over 5,000 youth who participated in 4-H over a 5-year period and asked for their feedback regarding having them rate those key areas listed. I'm not going to read them all to you. But we wanted to highlight, you have on one of those handouts is a full highlight of the various areas and how they were ranked by those youth. Just wanted to highlight a couple of those. As far as a sense of belonging, we feel that is an important piece for the 4-H program for youth to feel like they belong, help to reduce those sense of not being part, reduce teen suicide and other issues and depression and things that go along with that. So of the respondents, 96% of the youth responded felt that 4-H did provide them that sense of belonging. 94% felt that they were receiving quality life skills and things that they can transfer from their 4-H experiences into their everyday lives, whether it be school or work. 80% of the youth responded that we served as a possible preventative program to keep them out of participating in risky or illegal behaviors through their teenage years. 89% responded they felt that through the 4-H partnership with volunteers and through their club experiences that they had developed strong, healthy relationships and had an appreciation for people with other views and perspectives in their lives. That's pretty much all I have for you, unless you have questions. Dave and I can field them, or if our information's there, if you want to reach out to either one of us.
All right, thank you. I was going to do another dad joke, but I resisted.
Well, I was going to comment.
Since you said
a dad joke.
Sorry. It's not a bad thing.
I know, but it's.
I was going to comment. So my children are in 4-H, and they get great benefit out of it. Particularly my son who's on the autism spectrum and the idea of being involved in leadership and activities at school is very nerve-wracking for him because of the high level of anxiety with his autism. But because of the way 4-H is structured, we can have a, what you call a home chapter or a family chapter. And then my mom, his grandma, is the chapter leader.
Nice.
So that gives him the little bit of support that he needs to have the confidence to go out and do that. And I've seen throughout the last several years with him, when we would start doing 4-H activities, and we would go to the conferences and the day activities, my mom would go to all the sessions with him, right? And if he was involved in a school activity, the school advisor, first of all, he'd be too scared to go. But if we talked him into going, the school advisor may not be able to go to each of those with him. But then we transition all the way to the leadership conference that you guys just had, where my mom drove him there and sat in the lobby, and he was able to go to all of the classes by himself.
That's great.
But just knowing that she was sitting in the lobby. That's and good. So it really truly is giving him the ability to, if you look, you know, looking at your model, how it's, well, be curious, think I can do this. And it really has given him the opportunity to go through and do that in a way that other high school kids going to one of these leadership conferences isn't a big deal for them. But for a child with social anxiety or autism, or even just someone who struggles with a lot of self-confidence, 4-H provides them the opportunity to transition in a way that no other youth organization does.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to share a quick story, if you don't mind, as well.
Absolutely.
Out of our had a young man attend our Facebook STEM activities. He attended the first two last week and then signed up to attend a plant and science workshop that we were doing out of our office with a completely different teacher. And it was so cute. That afternoon, after he got home from his plant science class, I received a phone call to office from this young man. I think he's 10, 11 years old. got on his mom's phone, called the office, and said, asked to speak with me. So you're like, wow, okay, 10-year-old doing that. So, Melanie, I just want to tell you, I did science. He was so excited and explained how he had gone home and comprised his own science project, science experiment, formed his hypothesis, tested it, formed a conclusion, and then called me to let me know. I mean, and that's just so, that's what the awesome part about 4-H is, whether it's small group, large group, you know, a lot of these things you say, oh, schools can provide that for you too. But there's something special about being in this out of school 4-H environment that really helps youth thrive. So,
yeah, I would agree that, I mean, out doing it outside of school adds an element that helps them really be able to apply it to life.
Yeah, and a lot of the pressure is taken off. It's not for a grade.
Exactly.
It's because I want to do it. It's something I love.
And if his science experiment had failed, it wouldn't have mattered because his grade wasn't dependent on it, which gives him the courage to try.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's what we want to do. We want kids to try.
See, that's fantastic. I love that. I love that those are happening. I was a 4-H kid, but I was all focused around horses, so it was a whole different experience. I tried to raise a chicken for a while and got bored of that really quick. So that
was
about my
hard to smuggle.
Yeah, that's right.
We started with chickens. We haven't actually made it up to horses. We started with chickens, then we went with lambs. We haven't made it to horses.
And that's part of learning. You discover what you like, what you don't like.
Right.
Things that you want to go back to, things you don't ever want to see again.
And our hope is we're building the passion for our next generation of commissioners, our next generation of agricultural experts, entrepreneurs, scientists, doctors, lawyers. I mean, that's who we're trying to reach and give them that chance to really find that passion and run with it.
And I can see definitely see the difference between the youth that participate in 4-H and the ones that don't, and their ability to cook, their ability to understand nutrition.
And they know where milk comes from.
Right. They know where the milk comes from. And amongst my family, those that go to 4-H, they can cook, they understand nutrition, the elements of a nutritious meal, because they learn all that in 4-H.
And I'm not the best cook. Well, I'll have to admit that.
But. Well, it's because you were
my wife
horses.
Is. But
you were focused on horses.
Let me ask something. I may have missed it, but were these submitted as part of the agenda?
They were not. I'm sorry, I missed that.
I would say maybe if we could, we could either include this or the slides she presented make part of the agenda.
Yeah, we'll just
in that way when public goes into the website.
I will verify that was an informal survey. It didn't follow all of the university standards for.
Well, leave your name there. That way they can come back and haunt you about the exactness.
We could probably email the.
I have PDFs. Alice. I can send them all over to you.
Alice. Yeah.
That would be great. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
And
thank
afterwards, you. Yeah. After the meeting, my mom has a question she wants me to ask you.
Okay. Perfect. No worries. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
All right. Fantastic. Okay. Are there any public comments, any general public comments? Seeing none, we will move into our one closed meeting. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right, we're back in open session of final motion.
Make a motion, we adjourn.
I will second that motion.
We're now adjourned.